This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Boylston and Bolton. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from Berlin, Bolton, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, Stirling, and West Boylston. Today, we will be reading from the May 1st edition of the Clinton Item. This is Peter Wilson. All our articles today will be written by Jan Gottesman, editor of the Clinton Item, unless otherwise indicated. Our first article today from Bolton is entitled, New Police Chief Says Bolton Feels Like Home. Donald Murphy doesn't like to talk about himself. He would rather talk about the team at the Bolton Police Department and the legacy he inherited from the late police chief, Luke Hamburger. But Murphy also understands that to get to know the new community he serves and its people, he needs to let them get to know him. Murphy took over as police chief in Bolton in March. His journey began in his hometown of Westwood, but he was not the little boy who dreamed of becoming a police officer when he grew up. "I wanted to be an engineer and take over my father's business," Murphy said. His parents were Irish immigrants, which meant he pitched in, helping build houses when he was 13. "Most children had the summer off. I was roofing houses," he said. He started college, but when his father got sick, he dropped out to help his family business. "I had the inclination to continue school, so I would leave work on Tuesdays and Thursdays and go to school," he said. He ran Murphy Construction from 2003 to 2008, but he kept at his studies, eventually earning an associate degree in criminal justice in Massachusetts Bay Community College and a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Southern New Hampshire University. He got his bachelor's degree at 38 and is now working on his master's degree. In 2006, then-Westwood Police Chief William Chase asked if I still intended to be a police officer, he said. The next day, he contacted me and asked me to come in and fill out the paperwork. So while being a police officer might not have been his dream, it became a possibility. He took the civil service exam. After I ran into Chief Chase, I decided to give it a shot, and I never looked back, he said. In Westwood, he was a patrol officer from 2008 to 2015, then a detective until October 2019, at which time he became a patrol sergeant, supervising 3 to 5 officers. He held that role until August 2024, at which time he took on the role of administrative sergeant, which he did until December of that year. After that, he was promoted to lieutenant, overseeing 24 patrol officers and patrol sergeants on 3 shifts. That's when he decided to look for a chief's position. He saw the Bolton Post after the unexpected death of Hamburger last fall. "I reached out to people who I know who knew the Bolton Department and knew Chief Hamburger. I met him once and remembered him being jovial and a really nice person," Murphy said. Another friend had been a reserve officer here, and he said a lot of good people worked there. He was hired by the Bolton Selectmen after they interviewed 3 candidates on February 13th. He beat out the other 2 candidates, Christopher Bradley, the senior sergeant in Bolton, and T. Matthew Hoare, a patrol sergeant in Mendon. Murphy and Bradley were the top choices of all the members of the board, with Select Board Chair Kate Buick and member Bill Nichols giving the slight odd to Murphy, noting his private sector experience as well as his work on his department's accreditation. Selectman Brian Boyle favored the internal candidate, Bradley, but said the two had opposite and complementary strengths. Murphy acknowledged he had big shoes to fill. "I saw it as an opportunity," the chief said. "I saw what Luke Hamburger had built around him. I am benefiting from what he built." The department has a cohesiveness that Murphy said is evident to anyone. "People work together to make sure the job gets done. That is a lot of Chief Hamburger's legacy," he said. And Murphy hopes to serve as a mentor for other officers on the department, the way others have served as his mentors. There are still some things he has been trying to figure out, but he hopes to grow the department as the town grows, definitely learning the challenges, including traffic, especially Routes 117 and 495. He sees the staff as a valuable resource and intends to continue the tradition of community policing. He said he's looking to reach out and get to know more people in the community. We need the community to do our job effectively. Community policing is vital to that role, he said. It's not about me. This is a collaborative effort. We work as a team for the people of Bolton. I am just one of many. So far, everyone he has met has been welcoming, and he's enjoying his time in Bolton. It's a nice small New England town. Westwood was also a small town, so this feels like home, he added. Our next article is from West Boylston. West Boylston's new trash system being readied by Ken Cleveland. The solid waste program is preparing for new operations in West Boylston. The team has selected the style of bins and how they are to be marked, interim town administrator Carter Terenzini told the select board at its April 22nd meeting. The final count for bins may change. Terenzini said he did not have a final price because Republic has agreed that we can pay it out over time with us owning it, he said, covered by the $75,000 he had built into the budget. It'll actually be modestly less, he said. That will allow us to return the bulk of the free cash appropriation from last October's special account meeting, he said. Everything's proceeding, with a mailer planned in the next few weeks on recycling. It will also note that although people are no longer going to be using the pay-as-you-throw bags, they still have an interest in keeping costs down, because if the costs blow through the budget, the only way to recover it is to either go back to pay-as-you-throw or to raise rates. A letter will also go out about the senior discount applications. A meeting will follow about 6 weeks after the kickoff of the new process to solicit comments and feedback. The plan calls for residents waiting before asking for changes in bins. Some seniors are concerned that they can't move the larger bins. The smaller bins will be available as part of the senior discount application. Everyone else has to wait 6 months, so they live with them, they experience them, they see how they work, and then we can get a sense of inventory, Terenzini said. And then they may have to buy more bins if people wanted to change between a 32 and 65-gallon sizes. On the budget, Terenzini updated the board with some budget numbers. A supplemental bill for the fiscal year 2026 budget could distribute $80 million in road funds for excess costs for snow and ice operations allocated based on road miles in each town. It could be up to $138,000 for West Boylston, an additional $20 million, if it remains in the supplemental budget, could be distributed at the discretion of the State Department of Transportation, Terenzini said. For things related to winter storm damage, but more focused on things like bridges. He noted the budget will still have to go through the conference committee and be signed by the governor before anyone will see additional funds. In other business, the board went over the initial town meeting warrant. Various spending and bylaw changes could await voters at the May 18th semi-annual town meeting. The board will continue with work to finalize the warrant over the next few weeks. Terenzini said he would have better numbers at future meetings. The following is a letter to the editor submitted by Emily Rose, the chair of the Board of Library Trustees of the Thayer Memorial Library in Lancaster. She writes, Lancaster Library invites everyone to its history programs to enjoy Lancaster History Month at the Thayer Memorial Library. From King Philip's War to the early battles of the Revolution, Lancastrians participated in events leading to the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776. They include citizens of communities once part of Lancaster that separated, some before and some after the nation's founding. The TML plans more 250th anniversary programs, exhibits, and special events from June to October. You can find the details at www.thayermemoriallibrary.org. We hope to see you there. From West Boylston, the West Boylston COA launches a new farmers market. The West Boylston Council on Aging is launching its first ever farmers market, a community initiative designed to bring seniors and residents together while supporting local vendors, farmers, and small businesses. The market will be held Wednesdays from 3 to 6 p.m. at the West Boylston Senior Center, 120 Prescott Street. While the Senior Center remains dedicated to serving the town's older adults, this market is organized and hosted by the Senior Center and is open to the entire community, welcoming residents of all ages. My goal is to gain access to locally grown fruits, vegetables, honey, breads, and more for the seniors that I serve daily, said Council on Aging Director Kim Mashey. Scheduled to begin immediately after the Senior Center closes for the day, the market has been planned to ensure there is no disruption to senior programming while also creating an opportunity for the broader community to gather and enjoy the outdoor space together. In addition, Wednesdays were intentionally selected to help avoid overlap with surrounding towns' farmers markets, allowing the vendors the opportunity to participate in multiple markets throughout the week and expand their reach. This market is a great opportunity to bring people together in a welcoming, familiar space, Mashey said. We're proud to offer something that supports both our seniors and the community as a whole. The farmers market will feature a variety of local vendors, including farms, food producers, and artisans. Organizers are currently seeking vendors who are interested in participating and helping to build a vibrant and successful first season. This is our first year, and we're really looking forward to grow something special for West Boylston, Mashey added. We encourage local vendors to join us and community members to come out, support small businesses, and enjoy what we hope will become a wonderful yearly tradition. Residents interested in becoming a vendor or learning more about the market are encouraged to reach out to the West Boylston Senior Center for additional information at 508-835-6916 or COA Director at westboylston-mass.gov. That's COA Director at westboylston-ma.gov. With election season approaching, we have a number of articles concerning elections. From Berlin, the Berlin election, May 11th, could feature write-in contests. There are no races on the May 11th ballot in Berlin, but a couple of seats that could be filled by write-in candidates. Voting at the town offices is Monday, May 11th, noon to 8 p.m. This is the final election at the office building. After this, the elections will be held at Berlin Memorial School. According to town clerk Eloise Sahls, the following people returned papers, which were certified, to make it onto the ballot. On the ballot are the following. For moderator 1 year, Barry Eager, incumbent. For town clerk 3 years, Kaylee Pittard. For select board 3 years, Carolyn McDonald. For assessor 3 years, Kevin Pond, incumbent, 1 year. Vacant. Cemetery Commissioner, 3 years, Barry Eager, incumbent. Library Trustee, 3 years, Susan Skoog, incumbent. Planning Board, 5 years, vacant. And Board of Health, 3 years, Paul Bekelk, incumbent. And there are two candidate announcements. The first, Connors announces run for West Boylston Select Board seat. He writes, "My name is Michael Connors, and I would like to introduce my candidacy for West Boylston Select Board. I wanted to take the opportunity to introduce myself. I'm a lifelong resident of Central Mass. I graduated from Wachusett Regional High School in 2003 and went on to receive a Bachelor's of Science degree in Architectural Building and Engineering Technology from New England Institute of Technology in 2007. I have worked my entire career in residential and light commercial design, building, and remodeling. I've worked on everything from simple bathroom remodels to multi-building compounds in remote locations. I believe strongly that my experience in design, permitting, and execution of these complex projects gives me the strategic planning, attention to detail, communication, and problem solving needed to be an effective select board member. My wife and I moved to town in September 2017. We moved here shortly after getting married with the intention of starting a family. We were drawn to the small town, big heart, charm, the proximity to our respective workplaces, but most importantly, the excellent school system. Since moving here, we have had two amazing children. Our oldest son is currently in first grade, and our younger son will be entering kindergarten next year. I have served on the youth soccer board as secretary, coached and coordinated the U4 skill and drills program, am currently on the West Boylston Little League board, and I am coaching and coordinating both the T-ball and coach pitch programs this spring. I also served on the school committee last year, the school building committee last year, as a resident appointee non-voting member. This was very eye-opening and an educational experience for me, which prompted me to run for this seat. We have firmly established our roots in town and are looking forward to watching our kids continue to grow and thrive in this amazing community. Please consider voting for me on June 2nd. And that is from Michael Connors, running for the West Boylston Select Board seat. In other candidate announcement news, Goodsell announces candidacy for Clinton Select Board seat. And she writes, I, Deborah Goodsell, am proud to announce my candidacy for Select Board in the town of Clinton, a community that I have been fortunate to call home for most of my life. Growing up in Clinton, I learned what true commitment to community looks like. My late father, Robert Champagne Jr., served as a Select Board member and instilled in me the values of accountability, hard work, and putting residents first. That example shaped my belief that the local government must be responsive, transparent, and focused on delivering real results. My commitment to public service includes previously serving on the Clinton School Committee, where I worked to support students, families, and educators while helping guide important decisions for our schools. I've always believed that serving your community isn't just about making decisions. It's about listening, showing up, and doing the work. That is the standard I will bring to the Select Board. Professionally, I served the town of Clinton for more than a decade as director of the Council of Aging. In that role, I worked closely with residents while navigating the day-to-day realities of municipal government. I gained a practical understanding of how our town operates and where we can improve. Now, working in another municipality, I bring both independence and a fresh perspective. I am free from internal constraints while remaining deeply committed to Clinton's future. I'm running to help ensure Clinton remains a place where families thrive, businesses grow, and residents feel heard and supported. I'm committed to strengthening town services, supporting residents of all ages, and keeping our community vibrant and well-managed for generations to come. I'm ready to step up, serve, and work hard for the future of the town that has given me so much. I respectfully ask for your vote on June 8th. And that message was contributed by Deborah Goodsell, who is running for the Clinton Select Board seat. From Clinton, candidates night scheduled for the Clinton Select Board May 19th. With four candidates running for two seats on the Clinton Select Board, a candidates night has been scheduled for Tuesday, May 19th at 6:30 p.m. in the Selectmen's Chamber. The item will moderate the discussion and Clinton TV will broadcast it. So far, two candidates have agreed to participate, Sean Kerrigan and Matt Kobus. Deborah Goodsell and Brendan Bailey have declined the invitation, but are welcome to participate if they change their minds. All questions will be posed by the moderator. If there's a specific question you would like posed to the candidates, it must be a general question appropriate for anyone running for the office. Submit it ahead of time for consideration by emailing clintonitem@yahoo.com by Friday, May 15th. No questions will be taken from the audience, but the moderator will try to hit as many topics as time allows. The election is to be held on Monday, June 8th. From Bolton, the select board race highlights Bolton's May 11th ballot. There was a caucus, then a period for papers, but Bolton voters will only see one contested contest when they go to the polls May 11th. And there is a lack of candidates for a key position. Polls are open Monday, May 11th, from noon to 8 p.m. at Neshoba Regional High School's auditorium. If you're unable to make it to the polls, early voting hours will take place Monday, May 4th, 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Tuesday, May 5th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Wednesday, May 6th, 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and Thursday, May 7th, 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. in the town clerk's office. For a three-year seat on the select board, incumbent Bill Nichols and newcomer John Carlin both got nominations at the caucus. At the caucus, voters have the opportunity to nominate two candidates per seat. No one stepped forward for a three-year seat on the Neshoba Regional School Committee, and no one came in before the March 23rd deadline to submit signatures to appear on the ballot. Incumbent Amy Cohen had announced she would not be running for re-election. Other seats are currently unopposed, but there is a candidate for each position. Nominated at the caucus were the following. Moderator, 1 year, incumbent Douglas Story. Board of Assessors, 3 years, incumbent Charlotte Johnson Zemko. Cemetery Committee, 3 years, incumbent Donald Baum. Board of Health, 3 years, incumbent Christopher Rogers. Library Trustee, 3 years, incumbent Pamela Zakansky. Parks and Recreation, 2 3-year seats, Mackenzie Lutz and Marissa Miller. And Planning Board, 5 years, incumbent James Barr. For more information on the election, contact the town clerk's office at 978-779-2771 or email townclerk@bolton-ma.gov. From Boylston, the race for selectmen on Boylston's May 11th ballot. With the reduction in the school budget, the Proposition 2.5 override to pay for the schools has been canceled. While the question will remain on the election ballot, Town Clerk Dawn Porter said voters will be told to ignore it. That means a single contest will appear on the ballot when Boylston voters go to the polls on Monday, May 11th. Balloting will be from noon to 8 p.m. at the Hillside Gymnasium, Boylston Town Hall, 221 Main Street. The Board of Selectmen member Seth Reitinger decided not to run for re-election. Taking out papers were Kelly Lasitska of Ledgewood Drive and Vincent Sasso of Madera Court. Running unopposed are Assessor, 3 years, Rebecca Donohealy, Board of Health member, 3 years, John Frederick Wenzel, Planning Board member, 5 years, Mark Johnson, Municipal Light Board member, 3 years, Stephen Murrow, Library Trustees, 2 3-year seats, incumbent Arlene Murphy and Kathleen Berry. Incumbent Susan Terrell chose not to run for re-election. The Cemetery Commission, 3 years, Barbara Seed, and Parks and Recreation Commissioners, 2 3-year seats, Mackenzie Davis-Martin. Porter said Jessica Gold-Winders is running as a known write-in candidate. There were 2 vacant seats. For more information, contact Porter at dporter@boylston-ma.gov. In election news from Lancaster, no contests on Lancaster's May 11th election ballot. With a withdrawal from the ballot in a planned race for Finance Committee, there are no contested races for Lancaster's May 11th town election. With 2 3-year seats available on the Finance Committee, Christine Burke and Linnea Lakin Survey remain in the race and are unchallenged. Town Clerk Amanda Cannon said, "Every other seat has just one person running. On the ballot will be the following: a 3-year term on the Board of Health, Mackenzie Maloney; a 3-year term on the Board of Public Works, Lawrence Kelly; 2 3-year terms on the Library Trustees, incumbents Emily Rose and Adam Zant; a 3-year term as Town Moderator, incumbent William O'Neill Jr.; 2 3-year terms on the Neshoba Regional School Committee, incumbent Sharon Carlson Polk and newcomer Alexis Colton; a 5-year seat and 3-year seat unexpired terms on the Planning Board, Maxwell Mahabir and Louis D. Natale III, respectively; and a 3-year seat on the Select Board, incumbent Jason Allison. Polls are open in the Old Town Hall Monday, May 11th, from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Early voting will be available Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, May 5th, 6th, and 7th, from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Friday, May 8th, from 8:30 a.m. to noon, all in the town clerk's office. For information, contact Cannon at acannon@lancastermA.gov or 978-365-3326, extension 1090. And from West Boylston, two contests emerge on West Boylston election ballot. With the deadline to submit papers now passed for the June 2nd West Boylston election, two contests are shaping up. Candidates still have until April 30th to withdraw their names, which I guess is past, hasn't it? Three people have submitted papers for the 2 3-year seats on the Select Board: Michael Connors, Mark Frieden, and Winthrop Handy. And two people have taken out papers for a 4-year seat on the Planning Board: Paul Anderson and Matthew Barakian. No one took out papers for a 3-year seat on the Board of Library Trustees. Anyone interested in running a write-in campaign can contact Town Clerk Candace Livingston at 774-261-4021 or C. Livingston at westboylston-ma.gov for information. Running unopposed in West Boylston are, for school committee, 2 3-year seats, incumbents Nancy Hubbard and Emily Lehman; for library trustees, 2 3-year seats, incumbents Sharon Hennessy and Deborah Stamper; for planning board, 5 years, incumbent Mark Frieden; for Board of Light Commissioners, 3 years, incumbent James Pedoni Jr.; for Housing Authority, 5 years, incumbent Brenda Bowman; for Housing Authority, 1 year, Bethany Ingram; and for Board of Water Commissioners, 3 years, incumbent Michael Mard. The last day to file written objections was April 30th. The last day to register to vote is Friday, May 22nd at 5 p.m. Voting will take place on Tuesday, June 2nd, noon to 8 o'clock. From Sterling, Sterling ballot features debt exclusions. Voters will be going to the polls May 11th for the annual town election in Sterling. In addition to the annual election, there are 3 ballot questions following up on votes at the May 4th town meeting. The sole contested race is for 1-year seat on the Sterling Municipal Light Board. Incumbent Joseph Nason has a challenger, Richard Shepherd. There are currently 3 offices with no candidates: a 3-year seat on the Board of Assessors, a 3-year term as constable, and a 5-year term on the Housing Authority. Seats on the ballot are the following: Board of Health, 3-year term, Tony Torres LaFond; Select Board, 3-year term, Kirsten Newman; Department of Public Works Board, 3-year term, incumbent Blaine Burchard; Library Board of Trustees, 2 3-year terms, incumbent Heidi Martin and Sean Francis; Planning Board, 3-year term, Drew Kohler. Sterling Municipal Light Board, 3-year term, Andrew Gonsorsik. The Wachusett Regional School District Committee, 3-year term, incumbent Linda Woodland, and Wachusett Regional School District Committee, 1-year term, Paula Leftwich. Ballot questions will also be on the ballot. Proposition 2.5 exemptions require a vote at both a town meeting and an election ballot. Also, exempting money from Proposition 2.5, the amount related to pay costs related to public safety, communications, and the payment of all costs. At the town meeting, voters will be asked to authorize $300,000 for costs not covered by the regionalization of the dispatch center. Also, exempt the amounts required to pay costs related to the design of the Oak Hill Cemetery retraining wall and the payment of all costs. Voters at the town meeting will be asked to authorize $100,000. Also on the ballot will be the move to exempt the amounts required to pay the cost of designing and constructing a new DPW facility, including design development, final design and bidding, retaining a designer and the owner's project manager, site work and construction, originally equipping, and the payment of all costs incidental. At the town meeting, voters will be asked to authorize $25 million. The annual election is Monday, May 11th at Houghton Elementary School, 32 Botel Road. Polls will be open noon to 7 p.m. Vote by mail will also be available for this election. No excuse needed. Residents can submit a VBM application at the town clerk's office or apply online at the Secretary of State's website. The last day to request a vote by mail ballot is Monday, May 4th. To be counted, vote by mail ballots must be received by the town clerk's office in person by mail or left in the drop box outside the Butterick Municipal Building by 7 p.m. on Monday, May 11th. Our next article is entitled Governor Headlines North Central Chamber Meeting. The 42nd Annual Business Meeting and Luncheon for the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce is scheduled for Thursday, June 11th from 11:45 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Great Wolf Lodge, 150 Great Wolf Drive, Fitchburg. As the region's cornerstone annual event, the Chamber's annual business meeting brings together hundreds of business and community leaders from across North Central Massachusetts to honor the people and accomplishments that are moving North Central Massachusetts forward. In addition to the Chamber's annual recognition awards and commencement for the Community Leadership Institute class of 2026, the event will also feature a tabletop business expo to showcase local businesses. The expo will provide exhibitors with a unique opportunity to reach business and community leaders from throughout North Central Massachusetts attending the event. The business expo will begin at 10:30 a.m. The annual luncheon and meeting will run from 11:45 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. and the business expo will close out the day from 1:30 to 2. This year's keynote speaker is Governor Maura Healey. First elected in 2022, Healey made history as the first woman elected governor in Massachusetts history and the first openly lesbian governor elected in the United States. Prior to serving as governor, she served 2 terms as Massachusetts Attorney General. Since taking office, Healey has focused on lowering the cost of health care, housing, and energy, creating jobs, and growing Massachusetts' economic leadership in cutting-edge sectors like life sciences, climate tech, advanced manufacturing, and applied AI. She will speak to the strength of Massachusetts' economy, especially in the North Central region, and the urgency behind her efforts related to affordability and business growth. The Chamber's annual meeting celebrates businesses and leaders working together to ensure a prosperous future for North Central Massachusetts and is funded by the support of businesses and organizations who are committed to that goal, including the annual meeting sponsor, Fidelity Bank, the Business Expo sponsors, Fitchburg State and Workers' Credit Union, The supporting sponsors, Great Wolf Lodge and the Guild of St. Agnes of Worcester, Mount Wachusett Community College, Rochelot Tool and Die, and Rockland Trust, and media sponsor, FATV. Registrations for the annual business meeting and luncheon are being accepted through June 10th at the northcentralmass.com. The cost is $65 per person for members and $80 per person for non-members and includes lunch. Reservations are required. Supporting sponsorships, expo tables, and tables of 10 are also available. For more information about the event, contact the Chamber at 978-353-7600, extension 222 or extension 235, or via email at chamber@northcentralmass.com. In obituary news, on April 18th, 2026, lifelong Lancaster resident Rosie Sammancini, 95, passed away unexpectedly at home. The daughter of Italian immigrants, Rose graduated from Lancaster High School in 1948 and earned a full scholarship to Boston University. She graduated from Boston University's Sargent College of Physical Education in 1952 with a Bachelor of Science in Physical Education. She would later return to Boston University and earn her Master's of Education degree in 1963. For 40 years, Rose taught physical education at various schools in New Hampshire, New York, and Massachusetts. Rose would ultimately retire from Burlington High School in 1991 after teaching physical education there for 28 years. In addition to teaching, Rose coached basketball, softball, field hockey, volleyball, and tennis. Rose traveled extensively during her summer holidays, visiting the national parks and Europe. In retirement, Rose enjoyed a round of golf, a good book, and a piece of chocolate. She's survived by her 7 nieces, Dolores Kingdon, Nancy Joyce, Rosemarie Kilcoyne, Sandra Priestman, Tony Ann Thigpen, Antoinette McConnell, and Jody Van Hoof. Her 13 great nieces and nephews, Stephanie, Jack, Carrie, David, Joshua, Melissa, Angela, Christopher, Kristen, Michael, Alicia, John, and Amy, and her 19 great-great nieces and nephews, Anastasia, Katerina, Kaylee, Juliet, Benjamin, Samantha, Everett, Logan, Liliana, Owen, Daniel, Jade, Emerson, Jackson, Henry, Jeffrey, Aaron, Valentina, and Audrey. She was predeceased by her parents, Cesare and Angelina Florioli Sammancini, as well as her siblings, Mary Barbarisi, Valentina Nina Bourgeois, Stella Priestman, Ida Collins, and Antonio Tony Sammancini, her nephew Billy, and great-nephew Jeffrey. A calling hour was held on Friday, May 1st, with a mass of Christian burial immediately following at Immaculate Conception Church in Lancaster. Burial was in St. John's Cemetery, Lancaster. Memorial contributions may be made in memory of Rose Sammancini to New Agenda, the Northeast Women's Sports Organization, 106 Armiston Street, Brockton, Massachusetts, 02302, or to a local animal shelter of your choice. Online condolences may be placed at www.mcnallywatson.com. The O'Neill family announces the death of Judith Ann O'Neill. Judy died April 10, 2026, while under hospice care at New Horizons in Marlborough, Mass. Judy had been battling various forms of cancer for over 25 years. She fought to live right up to the last moment before finally finding peace and comfort. Judy was born in Boston, the daughter of James J. Tipp and Ann M. O'Neill, on October 17, 1946. She was raised in Winthrop and Hyannisport, where she spent her summers. Judy graduated from Winthrop High School, class of 1964, and Coe College, class of 68. With a degree in hand, Judy completed a teacher certification course and began a career in education. She had the good fortune to be hired by the Clinton School District as an elementary school teacher. She immediately bonded with all her colleagues. More importantly, being short in stature but big in heart, she received the love and respect of her students. Long after Judy retired, people would approach her and ask if she taught school in Clinton. When she said yes, they would smile and say, "You were my teacher," or "You taught a family member or a friend." Could a teacher ask for a better compliment? In March of 1985, Judy bought her home at 43 Fales Street in Worcester. To help pay the bills, she had a second job at Spaghetti's. She was rightfully proud of being able to afford her home on a teacher's salary. She loved the house, her neighbors, and the Burncoat area. In June of 2001, at the urging of her cousin, Mary Ford, she purchased a home at Lazy Days in North Fort Myers, Florida, becoming an official snowbird. Judy enjoyed escaping to Florida during the cold New England winters and the freedoms that warm weather brought. This also brought her closer to her cousins and brother Bill, who eventually bought a home in North Fort Myers after he retired. Judy was a warm and caring person, a true charmer. She enjoyed travel, quilting, golf, a purely social endeavor for her, Rails to Trails, Ding Darling Refuge, shell collecting on Sanibel Island, Zumba, and line dancing. Most of all, she enjoyed the company of her friends and families. She doted on her niece and nephew, from babysitting them when they were young, celebrating Christmases, attending their graduations and weddings, to sharing in the joys of the births of her grand-nephew and grand-niece. Judy was an integral part of their lives. Judy is survived by her partner, Michael J. Renault, twin brother James J. O'Neill Jr., Kathy, brother William W. O'Neill with Mary, niece Hillary O'Neill Hart with Devlin, nephew Sean M. O'Neill with Leah, grandnephew Cole Hart, grandniece Tessa Hart, and cousins Mary Ford with Chuck and Shirley Petit. The family would like to thank the staff of New Horizons Marlboro, Constellation Hospice, and DeMello Home Services for the many kindnesses and compassionate care that they extended to Judy. You are all truly wonderful people. We would also like to thank Pam Sullivan, Martha Bagby, and Carol Woods. They were always there for all the good times, but especially for the hard times that cancer brings. They are more than family. They are more than friends. They are family. In lieu of donations, please give your family and friends a hug and keep a place in your heart for a memory of Judy. James J. D. Morrill, 69, passed away on Monday, April 20th, 2026, at UMass Medical Center in Worcester. He is survived by his beloved wife, Kim Zimslowski Morrill, his daughters, Bethany Friel and husband Ryan, and Jessica Ponte and husband Brian, his brother Steve Morrill, his sister Mary Morrill St. Hilaire and husband Jean, nieces, nephews, extended family and friends. Son of the late Earl W. and Mary T. Riccardi Morrill, Jay was a skilled electrician who took great pride in his work and the relationships he built throughout his career. A member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, number 96, he was known for his strong work ethic, reliability, and camaraderie among his fellow tradesmen. Beyond his profession, Jay lived life with enthusiasm and deep appreciation for the simple joys. He found happiness in the open road on his Harley motorcycles. He also enjoyed trips to the casino, strumming his guitar, and sharing laughter and stories with those around him. Jay had a warm spirit, a lively sense of humor, and a way of making people feel at ease in his presence. Jay will be remembered for his kind heart, his dedication to family and friends, and the joy he brought to everyday moments. His memory will live on in the lives he touched and the love he shared. Calling hours were held on Monday, May 4th, at the Philbin Como Funeral Home. Online condolences may be placed at www.philbincomofh.com. Robert M. Rob Petto, 60, a proud lifelong Clintonian, passed away on Friday, April 24th, leaving behind a legacy of laughter, loyalty, and more than a few strong opinions. He is survived by his beloved wife, Dawn Hilbert Petto, who shared in his life and his love, and likely had the final say more often than Rob would care to admit. He was a proud father to Derek Petto and wife Anina, and Rachel Petto Hudson and husband David, and an even prouder grandpa to his two grandsons, Cole and Chase Petto, who brought out his soft side. Rob is also survived by his siblings, Patricia Petto Elworthy, Jeffrey Petto and wife Nancy, and Nicholas Petto, along with a crew of nieces and nephews, Lindsay, Zachary, Luke, Carly, Allison, and Jillian, who knew him as the fun uncle with the off-the-wall jokes or sayings. He leaves behind many cousins, extended family, and dear friends, as well as his loyal canine sidekick, Chloe, and his feline household supervisors, Harley, Olivia, Frankie, and Miss Kitty, who generously allowed him to live in their home. He was predeceased by his brother Michael Petto and his uncle Francis J. Petto Jr. Born to the late James and Constance Ball Petto, Rob was raised in Clinton and graduated from Clinton High School, class of 1983. He built a long and steady career close to home, spending many years at Christie and Thompson Auto Parts, conveniently located a half mile away, which may or may not have been part of the job's appeal. He later moved on to J-Bell Inc., where he worked as assembler third. Rob was unknown for his unmistakable sense of humor, the kind that could catch you off guard and leave you laughing long after. He was the guy you could count on, whether you needed a hand, a favor, or just someone to tell it like it is. A proud patriot, he flew his flag high and never shied away from sharing his views, whether you asked or not. He appreciated life's simple pleasures. Live music turned up just right, a perfectly cooked prime rib, and a cold Budweiser, preferably all in the same evening. A dedicated fan of Boston sports and NASCAR, he held a special place in his heart for Dale Earnhardt, the Intimidator, and likely felt he could have given him a run for his money and a good day. Above all else, Rob was a family man, a devoted husband, father, grandfather, brother, and uncle, whose greatest pride was the life he built with those he loved. The Petto family wished to thank the medical teams at Clinton Hospital and UMass Medical Center University campus for their care and compassion. Calling hours were held on Sunday, May 3rd. A funeral service was held on Monday, May 4th, followed by burial in Reservoir Pines Cemetery, Clinton. Memorial contributions may be made in memory of Robert M. Petto to Animal Shelter, Inc., 17 Laurelwood Road, Sterling, Mass., or to American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Box 2150, Westfield, Mass., 01086. Online condolences may be placed at www.philbincomofh.com. In sports news from West Boylston, the Lions softball look to league title by Bill Marsh. The West Boylston High School softball team is on a roll after an edge of your seat extra innings 4-3 victory over Quabbin on April 27th. The Lions earned their eighth victory of the season. It was also the strikeout cancer game. As of press time, West Boylston is undefeated with an 8-0 overall record, and it is 5-0 in the Midland Wachusett League D division. Against Quabbin, with the score knotted at 3-3, Lions senior Emily Petro dropped down a perfectly safety squeezed bunt, scoring freshman Eva LaPointe from third base in the bottom of the ninth inning to win the game. West Boylston fireballing left-hander Antonia Bianchini, a seventh grader, went the distance, scattering five hits while striking out 14 batters, which included her 100th K of her young career. Bianchini also helped her own cause with two hits and two RBIs. Last season, the Lions finished with a 15-7 overall record and advanced to the MIAA Division V Tournament Elite Eight. In the past 4 years, West Boylston has amassed 61 victories, two league championships, and was a state championship finalist in 2023. The other senior on the squad is Meg Flaherty. Junior Molly Hagerty is the first baseman, while freshman Eva LaPointe plays second base. At shortstop is freshman Bella Takars. Sharing center field is junior Issa Riviera and eighth grader Amelia Stevens. Sophomore Sophie Takars is also on the team. The team's assistant coaches are Rich Granger and Ross Chila. Karen Figueredo coaches the junior varsity team. In student honor news from Boston, several local students were named to the fall dean's list at Emerson College. Charlie Heinrich of Sterling, Abigail McNally of Lancaster, Tina Turovsky of Bolton, and Lily Zifkak of Boylston. From Weston, Michaela DeMartin of West Boylston was presented her research, Western Medicine versus Cultural Integration, during Regis College's third annual Social Justice Research Symposium on April 16th. DeMartin is a nursing major. Co-sponsored by the Writing Program and the Center for Student Engagement, the symposium features student research panels, poster presentations, art music displays and performances, and thesis slams from students across the university's undergraduate and graduate programs. From Worcester, Worcester Polytechnic Institute has announced that Sophia Kuznetsov of West Boylston, class of 26, majoring in psychological science, was awarded the university's Salisbury Prize. A total of 27 undergraduates out of a class of more than 1,200 were selected by their departments to receive this award. From Easton, Jenna Dumay, a member of Stonehill College's class of 2027, from Lancaster, was honored at the institution's Student Life Awards held Sunday, April 26. This program celebrates campus community members for their outstanding contributions to the betterment of Stonehill. In news from Clinton, the Clinton Savings makes donation for a museum's anniversary. The Clinton Savings Bank recently donated $3,500 to the Icon Museum and Study Center in celebration of its 20th anniversary. The contribution reflects CSB's ongoing commitment to supporting local cultural institutions and community organizations. The Icon Museum and Study Center, located in Clinton, is known for housing one of the largest collections of icons and art displays. The funds donated by CSB were used to produce three large exterior banners that are displayed on the building, increasing visibility for both pedestrians and drivers, encouraging them to visit. The museum is also planning an event later in May to formally celebrate this anniversary to bring increased community engagement and to continue its outreach work. The Icon Museum and Study Center is truly a unique place here in Clinton, as it is the only specialized museum for icons and Eastern Christian art in the United States, said Mary Dean, president and CEO of Clinton Savings Bank. Through its scholarly programs, lectures and conferences, and internships, the museum and study center inspire human connection and deepen cultural understanding. Their commitment to diversity, accessibility, and integrity reflects our own bank values, and we are honored to partner with them in enriching our community. From Boylston, the Boylston Cultural Council reception is May 9th. The Boylston Cultural Council is hosting a reception in honor of its 2026 grant award recipients at the Boylston Townhouse, 599 Main Street, on Saturday, May 9th, from 4 to 6 p.m. Boylston Cultural Council grant recipients will discuss their funded projects. The event is free, accessible, and open to all residents of Boylston and surrounding towns. Light refreshments will be available. State Representative Robin Kennedy and State Representative Megan Kilcoyne and Select Board Member David Marzo will be in attendance to welcome guests and present awards. This is a chance to honor the work of artists, craftspeople, and community organizations in Boylston, said Miyoshi Holden, chairperson of the Boylston Cultural Council. We are particularly excited about the range and quality of Boylston Cultural Council-funded projects this year. Each project was chosen because of its contribution to enrich the cultural life of Boylston residents. From Clinton, softball teams ready to strike out cancer for local coach. The May 8th varsity softball game between Clinton High and Tahanto will have extra meeting this year. This year's Strike Out Cancer game will support one of Clinton's own coaches, Lauren King, in her fight against breast cancer. The Strike Out Cancer game will be played at Savage Field at Vale Street, with the first pitch at 6:30 p.m. At its core, this game has always been about more than softball. It's about using the platform to support others, teach compassion, and bring a community together when it matters most, representatives said. And that's it for our recap of the Clinton item of May 1st. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Peter Wilson. Thank you so much for listening.
Hello once again, Audio Journal listeners. This is Bill Ruggiero giving you the latest weather forecast for today. This is Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. Here's my latest updated forecast. For today, we have mostly sunny weather, highs up near 80 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies with some showers, likely windy after midnight. Lows will be near 61 degrees. Now for your Wednesday, it's called for showers and thunderstorms likely. Some of the rain may be heavy at times in the afternoon. Highs near 66 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy skies with rain and thunderstorms before midnight. Then rain likely after midnight. Cooler. Lows will be in the upper 50s, and the outlook for Thursday is called for mostly cloudy skies with showers likely, highs Thursday in the lower 60s. That, folks, is your latest weather forecast for today, Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. This has been Bill Ruggiero saying have a good and happy day, everybody, and please stay tuned for more programming coming up next on Audio Journal. Take care. Have a wonderful Tuesday, everybody. Bye.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
A man left home one morning. He turned right and ran straight ahead. Then he turned left. After a while, he turned left again, running faster than ever. Then he turned left once more and decided to go home. In the distance, he could see two masked men waiting for him. Who were they?
And here's the solution to our mystery.
The man was a baseball player. The two masked men were the umpire and the other team's catcher.
And now back to our regular programming.
Hello, listeners. Would you like to hear news from Holden, Paxton, Princeton, Rutland, and Sterling that you're not likely to hear on commercial television and radio? Tune in to Audio Journal every Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.